This is the February 8 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Joe Jansen and Scott Irwin. They're both agricultural economists, members of the Farm Doc team from here on the Urbana-Champaign campus at the University of Illinois. Brian Stark joins us from the Andersons, and we'll also talk today with Logan Kimmel. He is with Roach Ag Marketing. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. And one of the hosts, along with the Farm Doc team, U of I Extension, of the upcoming All-Day Ag Outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. You won't want to miss that one. The members of the Farm Doc team will be there. We'll take up SAF, or Sustainable Aviation Fuel, with the director for the Center of Sustainable Aviation here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. His name is Phil Anselm. We'll talk about what's happening with EPA and the ESA, the Endangered Species Act, with Aaron Hager as it's related to herbicide use. We'll go through crop insurance, too, and the ARC and PLC decisions, all things that you will need to know about before the 15th day of March. You can get yourself registered now at willag.org. The cost is just $40. We'll pick up today with the webinar that Joe Jansen and Scott Irwin, agricultural economist at the University of Illinois, hosted on Thursday afternoon, post-USDA and CONAB reports. Joe goes through some of the changes that USDA made.
For corn, USDA's report estimates showed very minor changes to the U.S. balance sheet. Exports for 2023-24 remain unchanged at 2.1 billion bushels. USDA upped its ending stocks estimate for the United States just slightly, really a kind of a marginal change in ending stocks. Probably the bigger change was on the global balance sheet and what happened to South American production. USDA dropped their Brazil corn production estimate from 127 million metric tons down to 124, and left its Argentina production estimates, which are, again, much higher than the Argentine crop from last year, at 55 million metric tons, which is a fairly good-sized Argentine corn crop. On the soybean side, USDA lowered its export estimate for soybeans from 1.755 billion bushels down to 1.72, so dropped 25 million bushels out of the export number. That in with other changes on the balance sheet led to an increase in ending stocks of 35 million bushels. Probably the biggest sort of piece of news was what USDA did or didn't do to the South American production numbers. It lowered Brazil's production estimate from 157 down to 156, or 1 million metric tons, left its Argentine estimates, which the trade had maybe expected it might bump that number up somewhat, left that unchanged. But really that Brazil production estimate was much larger than the trade was expecting. And that definitely had an impact on the market, as we'll see in just a second. One thing to note, not listed here, is that USDA also increased its production estimate for last year's Brazilian crop, adding 2 million metric tons to the 2022-23 Brazil soybean crop estimate. And overall, kind of maybe putting a damper on some of the news that's been coming out from Brazil about, you know, crop trouble and, you know, poorer than anticipated growing season weather. Is that a fair characterization of what the report said, or anything else that you sort of noticed in the report, Scott, that you might add?
No, I think that's a great summary, Joe. I would just add that just a continuing interesting story with soybean acreage in Brazil. And it's actually a fairly regular occurrence now that USDA will go back and revise their own estimates of Brazilian soybean crops once they get in final data on crush and exports on the Brazilian balance sheet. And then they simply ask, does that really kind of line up with ending stocks? Does that seem to give us a reasonable number there? And if not, will raise the production. And so that's the real story, I think, coming out of the Brazil numbers today for last year's crop and this year's crop is really acreage, not yield.
Again, that was Scott Irwin, who you just heard, agricultural economist from the University of Illinois. He and Joe Jansen hosted a webinar on Thursday afternoon, post-USDA and CONAB reports. On the Brazil numbers, they pointed out that USDA went back to last year's Brazil soybean crop and raised the total production based on acreage or hectares by 2 million metric tons, while only lowering this year's crop by 1 million metric tons. Now, let's hear them go through the supply and demand balance sheets for the current marketing year or old crop corn and soybeans. Here's Joe Jansen.
So to kind of like put that in some context, we're going to just talk through the U.S. corn balance sheet a little bit, give a little bit of, this is mostly history at this point, certainly on the supply side. USDA made no changes to the supply side of the corn balance sheet for 23-24 in the latest WASD report. That's the same as it was, looks the same as it was in the January report. And we don't see sort of any reason why those numbers change materially at this point. We have a pretty large U.S. corn crop above 15 billion bushels. This is part of what's driving lower prices this is a supply-driven phenomenon where we are producing more than the world needs to use at this point in time. On the use side, again, no real changes from USDA in terms of corn use for 23-24. I'd maybe point out just that in this three-legged stool of corn demand, where we're talking about feed use, food, seed, and industrial, which is really mainly ethanol use, and exports, I think there are some warning signs that we might talk about. If you look at weekly ethanol use numbers, we're kind of struggling to get to the levels that would be necessary to meet that ethanol projection of 5.375 billion bushels. On the export side, and I'll talk through this in more detail in just a second, again, I think while we've seen pretty good export sales, especially compared to the dismal export pace that we had last year, there are some maybe warning signs that we may not get to those USDA numbers. But overall, I mean, the big picture takeaway is we're going to have, however you slice it, a 2 billion bushel plus carryout. USDA's current numbers just under 2.2 billion bushels. My projections come out just above that on the basis of maybe slightly lower use. But overall, a well-supplied U.S. corn market with a now over 15.5% stocks to use ratio. USDA's current season average price projection for 23-24 is at 480. I see some room for that to come down just on the basis of the fact that we have, now very close to $4, maybe 410, 420 cash corn here in the Corn Belt. That's a number that maybe drags that season average price number down a little bit, not a lot, because again, that season average price is a function of sales that have already been made and made at significantly higher cash prices than we're seeing today.
Here are a couple of those numbers that Joe Jansen did not give you. The FarmDoc team is using 2.72 billion bushels as their ending stocks figure. USDA is at 2.172, so 100 million more bushels from the FarmDoc team than what USDA is using currently for the old crop. And the season's average cash price from Joe Jansen and Scott Irwin is $4.65 a bushel. USDA currently has it at $4.80. Now, here are the soybean old crop numbers from the FarmDoc team.
For soybeans, again, the production side of the balance sheet, the big number here that's driving what remains a relatively tight supply situation inside the U.S. is that lower planted acreage number that came out back in June. I haven't moved much from where that number was. We're at 83.6 million acres of soybeans last year in the U.S. That kind of puts a lid on production and makes the supply and demand situation relatively tight. On crushing and export, the two main use categories here, USDA did lower their export number slightly. I can walk through the case for that number. I think USDA has a strong case to lower exports somewhat. I may be a little bit less bearish than USDA is, in spite of In spite of the case for that number, which I'll talk through in just a second when we look at U.S. soybean export pace. Nonetheless, the supply and demand situation on old crop remains fairly tight within the U.S., the caveat being that obviously the United States exists in a global market. USDA did lower their season average price forecast for soybeans down to $12.65. I'm going to sort of stick with that number for the time being, again, on the basis of much higher prices that prevailed in the fall. We'll talk about some issues to do with, you know, marketing timing and how farmers are moving that crop to market later in this discussion.
That's Joe Jansen. He was joined by Scott Irwin at a Thursday afternoon webinar from the FarmDoc team. You can find it at the FarmDoc Daily website as a YouTube video, or just go to youtube.com/@FarmDoc. That's youtube.com/@FarmDoc, and you'll be able to watch the whole hour-long webinar from them. We'll come back to them in just a bit, but I do want to turn our attention directly to the marketplace at this point and talk about some of the things that farmers have done and some of the reasons behind where we are as it's related to the number of bushels that's available to the market to use. We're now joined by Brian Stark. He is with the Andersons. Brian, thank you for being with us. If you could, would you please lay out the price later contracts that farmers used last fall and how that impacts the availability of crop currently?
Yeah, I think the interest from that standpoint, Todd, is the grower typically seasonally, January, February, March every year, is looking for an opportunity to transfer some of the ownership that they have on farm to the facilities that are willing to offer what we call free price later or DP. And I think that presents a kind of a transition or a bridge to the processor or end user not needing to stretch maybe nearly as much as we have with some of the record crops we saw in the East this year. Movements continue to be good. The farmer is not really enamored with the current board price, which means as he continues to move, he looks for ways to stay long his grain but yet move it off the farm. So that comes in the form of free price later or even basis contracts where cash needs come up, especially as we get closer to March 1st, which tends to be a big bill timeframe for most farmers in the East. And I think we're seeing a lot of that. The basis contracts allow an advance to generate some cash, and growers typically have been preferring that versus looking at borrowing short term on an operating note at 8% interest to finance some of those bills. So the movement in general continues to be heavy. We really haven't had a break with a later fall harvest. It's just kind of continued to allow the end user to live in the spot market. And basis has been kind of flat to grinding higher in spots. And I imagine that's going to continue until we get to the end of March and planting.
So the point is that these two contracts, the basis contracts that they may be deploying at this point, the PLL or price later contracts, make a grain available to the marketplace. However, the farmer has not actually, well, in the case of basis, they may have taken it advance, but they have not marketed entirely that crop. So they've not sold it. They've just made it available to be used. And the marketplace is not short of corn at this point in that process.
They're not. And I think that's one of the things that's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. The can metaphorically gets kicked down the road on a pricing decision, allows the grower to stay long in the form of basis. They can get cash needs advanced price later. They're long both the board and the basis. But that decision will eventually have to be made. And the general rhetoric in our conversations with growers today is the movement continues and will continue in those two forms, or some sort of cash sales through the next 30 to 45 days. And then the focus will turn to planting as it normally does. And then generally in that time frame in the spring, we have been encouraging growers to look for an opportunity to see basis maybe finally have to rally a little bit, given current board prices, to continue to move grain in a typical time frame in April, May, where grain movement is secondary to being in the field planting. The biggest risk we see for the producer on old crop is once they go to the field and forget about it and they hope for some sort of a futures recovery, eventually the rest of that supply on farm will have to come to market, most likely June, July, August. But on top of that, what we've been talking about today is that hedge pressure of actually selling and marketing the crop for the price later and free price later they're moving now also will have to be marketed. And that's a psychological lid that you could look at from that standpoint, that people will say, well, the funds are approaching record short. At some point, they'll want to cover that position, right? Well, there could be an orderly transfer as they buy in some of that short position. The American farmer has to then sell this old crop at some point in time. And so there may not be a big upward swing in board prices for the farmer to take advantage of as everybody continues to exit across the spectrum. And that's obviously we're looking down the road, assuming we have no crop problems. So today, it feels really bearish, and from both the movement of the size and the lack of demand, as well as the potential of how the acreage moves, where you really can't shave acres, you know, off of corn onto beans and present an upward bullish scenario. So I think the farmer, we've been encouraging them to sell rallies. If we get the opportunity to see December corn above $5, that is a sale in our mind. If you see old crop values somehow gravitate towards the upper fours, that's also a sale. I think this is going to be a market time frame where the grower has to sell and defend.
Why is the hedge pressure coming into the marketplace? I don't quite understand that, because I assume, but maybe I'm just wrong, that a PL or a basis contract, that the elevator is hedging at the time of the contract, not at the time of marketing, but maybe I'm wrong.
So the producer has to price that grain. What I mean by hedge pressure is at some point the farmer will call in and price that price later or price that basis contract. When that happens, the traditional hedger, the commercial facility, will sell futures. That is what I reference hedge pressure. And when you tie that to the record short that the index funds currently have, if at some rate they would want to cover that, they would buy futures. And so that orderly transition from the elevator hedging the farmer's sales to the index fund buying it, you may not see an upward momentum in price as if the index funds would have a reason to all of a sudden come in and buy. Obviously, it's a timing mechanism, right? When does the farmer want to engage? When does he want to sell and price his old crop? But the hedge pressure comes in when the farmer does that. And until he does, in essence, he's long his grain. So at that point, you're going to see, you know, some sort of, I guess, throwing into the towel. When does that occur? Is it post-pollination? Most likely. That typically is when, in a bearish market place in a given year, you see a lot of farmers patiently wait to see if there's any crop issues in development as we go into the next crop year before realizing that they have to market that grain moving forward.
So my understanding then is that the elevator or the commercial has an open position, relatively speaking, until the farmer pulls the trigger, and because the farmer is still holding all of the risk.
That's correct. That is correct. We have the ability, the title passes in a basis contract or price later from the farmer to the elevator. So the elevator can sell that grain to the end user. And you're right, that mechanism is separated and that's independently managed when we sell the cash to an end user from the elevator side. But the farmer, in essence, while passing title, still is long his grain. And that's why he's able to move the grain and transfer some of that ownership or all the ownership to the elevator and the risk of quality deterioration from his farm to the elevator on free price later or on a basis contract. But until he decides to lock and set the futures price, there is no real hedging. So he's still long the grain. So when he calls in and wants to sell it, then we sell the futures.
Yeah. So because I'm learning,
yeah,
I want to go through one other thing. So the elevator has shipped the corn, sold it to an end user.
Mm-hmm.
Why have you not? It is the risk the risk is still managed, it's separately, but how?
So if we're, in essence, we have, when we sell the cash grain, we don't, obviously, if we're offering free price later, mm-hmm. or a basis contract, right, we're long those cash bushels. We don't have any hedged risk associated with that because we have the title, but the grower hasn't priced it. So when you look at the position, I'm not going to actually do anything on the future side until either the farmer sells it to us, actually prices the futures on it, right? I have basis risk, but I don't have futures risk.
Correct.
Okay. Does that make sense?
So far.
I have basis risk. Okay. So we have basis risk as a commercial when the farmer delivers it into us on a basis contract, because I agree to pay a basis level for it. I have no basis or futures risk if I'm just offering free DP, right? Because there's no basis established, no futures established. I can independently then, because the title's passed to me, I can sell that cash grain into the marketplace whenever I want. And when I do that, I need to buy futures, right? Because I'm pricing a cash contract. So I'm in essence long futures when I sell the cash grain out of my elevator. But the farmer on the other side hasn't priced it yet. In this one small example, when he does, I will then sell the futures and my position will be neutral. So in essence, I'm going to be long futures against it until the farmer sells his grain, right? And then the futures wash out, and what you're left with is what's the basis I paid versus what's the basis I sold. And that's where commercials make a margin, right?
Okay. So I get it now. You the risk that you're managing is you all that the elevator always looks like it owns the crop.
Correct.
Until the farmer
Correct.
Sells it.
Yes. That's what I was referencing.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Now, turn your attention to new crop. You gave a number, I think, of $5.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime it's above that for new crop corn. What about for soybeans?
Soybeans, I think you're probably targeting somewhere around 12. You know, 12 to 12.50 at the top end. I think we're not seeing any type of detrimental in mass of the South American crop becoming an issue. I mean, the interesting dynamic from the crop report released by the USDA this week is they only dropped Brazil's soybean crop a million metric ton, yet CONAB, the Brazilian version of the USDA, is adjusted lower to 149.4. So depending on what you believe, one of those two isn't correct, right? We've got a big gap there. And I think the marketplace as a whole, we're not seeing the export demand we normally do. I think that's part of the reason the government this week cut exports. So our carryout's now back above 315. And yet again, with this tight economic scenario the grower is facing from a return standpoint, 2024, the general consensus for most people is you're going to see a switch of some corn acres to beans. And if that's the case, then I think the grower has to be willing to realign his targets on November 24 beans. And I think for me personally, $12 seems like a good logical starting point.
Brian Stark is with the Andersons. He's located here in Champaign County, works with the white corn facility, Frito-Lay, that's in Sydney, but also helps to manage the Logansport, Indiana ethanol facility and purchasing for both. Now let's turn our attention out of the cash market and in futures to see how Logan Kimmel with Roach Ag Marketing considers what should be done and these very difficult times for farmers. Thank you, Logan, for being with us. How might you and Roach Ag handle this situation?
Yeah, so what we've noticed here, and at least on the corn side of things, you know, market hasn't given us a ton of opportunities here from the fall until now on old crop. And one thing we've kind of kept an eye on and noticed is when the December a contract came off the board, a lot of folks ended up having to roll basis contracts or old crop contracts out to the March. And that spread between the December March got awfully wide into first notice day. I think it's close to about 27 cents. So if you've got decisions like that to be made off the March, right now we see that March May spread at about 11 to 12 cents in carry. So we still have some time here on the old crop on the March. But my fear would that might drift down to maybe 15 or 16. So there's ways and strategies if you need to sell and possibly look at just reowning with some calls with a little more time. It's just a function of if we do get a rally, I'm not sure you see that much led here by the March with the amount of old crop still unpriced on farm. That's what we've gathered from a lot of conversations we're having is there's still quite a bit of chunk of old crop corn out there that might still be hitting the market on a rally. So something for producers to keep an eye on if you have to make those decisions, whether it be on a basis contract or old crop, is watch that March-May spread on the corn.
And if you've got it stored in the elevator, is there a different set of advice?
Well, you do have to factor in storage costs associated and interest. So take a look at maybe what your cash price is today. Some folks have seen the basis stay in steady at the moment with the lower futures price. I'm not sure if we get a futures rally how that basis reacts, but I do think there'll be a lot of bushels that maybe try to flood the market. So that could maybe widen out potentially on a futures rally. If you end up needing to sell here and avoid that storage and pay some bills here for some inputs, down at these levels, there's ways to still maintain that ownership, fixed risk, maybe with some calls a little further out, say in May or July. But that'd be one way to avoid that here coming into a new month if you've got it in town, is keep in mind what could happen with the local cash price if we do get a futures rally just due to the amount of bushels that probably get dumped and sold on a move higher in regards to the futures.
This month, the United States Department of Agriculture will host its agricultural forum, The Outlook, and they will release a set of numbers for the new crop, corn and soybeans. There is a baseline out there already that was released last November, and it shows an $11.30 cash price per new crop soybeans, I believe $4.50 for new crop corn. Have you all been working with a supply and demand table and price expectations for new crop, and what might those be, and how do you incorporate them into a sales strategy?
Yeah, good question. That's going to be in focus here in regards to the new crop, and I think producers are going to have with most inputs and set and acreage in mind, opportunities throughout the coming year to market and lock in levels that make sense from a P&L on the farm balance sheet. We'll get reports, and there are still a lot of reports ahead of us in regards to the new crop. And time on the side, only being February, beginning of February. Right at these levels, probably not, in our opinion, the right spot to go out and do a bunch of hedging on new crop. But when you get a futures rally, if we do, in a short covering move by the funds, that's going to be very important to have orders in to make sales above the market. I think if you're looking at the December corn, the levels above that, we could see this market maybe gravitate to or move to this spring or summer, or levels to be sold into, keeping in mind that 450 average estimate on the on farm price. So I think that's going to be the name of the game here between now and the summer season, is having a plan in place and looking at your profit margins and making sales and having orders in when the market gives you an opportunity on this new crop, corn and beans.
Store and ignore does not work for this kind of condition.
It hasn't been the case this year.
That way, yeah. So take advantage. But if you're doing that, you'll need to have it covered. I suppose crop insurance is one way. And the most popular way that producers will cover that potential oversale, if they do, of a crop. For instance, if we were to have really a disastrous drought, it would have to be, I would think, extraordinarily disastrous. But it has happened in the past, certainly. So are there other things that you do along with having those sales in place? Do you cover them in the market?
Yeah, and that's there's a number of tools to take advantage of that. And I look back to this past year, we did have, at least in parts of Illinois, quite a bit of a scare on the crop side that made it tough to go out and do forward contracting, just not knowing what you're going to end up having. So in times like that, there's tools with new crop hedges and puts on the board, for an example, to at least get some of the price levels hedged off and locked in. If you're unsure of your cash production side of what you're going to have, you know, beyond a level that you're comfortable making a forward sale to your end buyer, those are the strategies and tools I think this summer you got to take a look at. If you can cover that percent, you're not sure production-wise, if we do have a drought, what you're going to have, I think that'll make a difference come harvest of this coming year.
That's Logan Kimmel. He's with Roach Ag Marketing. And on that note, let's return to the webinar that the FarmDoc team put together. You can find it again at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu in the webinars archive section, or just go to youtube.com/@FarmDoc. We'll pick up with Joe Jansen and Scott Irwin. Joe is discussing the new crop supply and demand tables for both corn and soybeans.
So then this just tries to put together some early numbers for the 24-25 balance sheet, the crop that we'll be planting this spring here in the United States, and then marketing into 2025. Every fall, the USDA puts together a long-run projection of U.S. commodity supply and demand for all major crops, including corn and soybeans. They projected a long-run corn plantage acreage number for 24-25 of 91 million acres. They actually see corn acreage kind of dropping going forward into the distant future. They see, again, a trend line yield projection of 181 bushels per acre. I think there's no reason to sort of deviate from that yield projection. I think we may still see pressure to plant acres. Our latest crop budgets here from the University of Illinois showing, you know, pretty dismal margins on corn. However, you know, enough to still cover variable costs, and there will be, I think, pressure to produce, to kind of outproduce low prices that'll maintain corn acreage. This is still an acreage decline relative to last year, a pretty significant one, but maybe not as large as was projected by USDA.
Given all of that, here are some of the bottom line numbers for corn from the FarmDoc team. 91.5 million acres, 181 bushel yield, 15.134 billion bushel total production. They have an ending stocks of 2.796 billion bushels of corn, a stocks-to-use ratio of 19.1%, and a season's average cash price for the corn that will be harvested this coming fall at $4.40.
Now, the sort of one caveat here is if we see that very large crop, we're also going to have to see a price that moves much closer to or below $4. This is an average price projection based on average crop conditions. A large crop would certainly have to, you'd think, require lower prices to ration that big global stockpile out. On the soybean side, USDA did project substantially larger acres for 2024. I think there's room to even increase that further on the basis of just sort of what we're seeing in terms of, you know, relative crop budgets. I see a much bigger shift into beans relative to the change in corn acres.
A quick note, that USDA projection was made in November. It's a baseline projection. It always comes out in November. USDA will not have an official acreage figure until the prospective plantings report comes out, and that is just a survey of farmers at the end of the month of March. And then the official supply and demand figures from USDA come out for the first time for the new crop in the month of May.
The trend line yield projection, again, 52 bushels per acre. That gets us to a 4.8 billion bushel total supply, about a 4.5 million bushel crop. We'd see, I think, you know, already projections for a strong domestic crush use in 2024. I've increased that even more. To 2.4 billion bushels in these projections, reduced that export number slightly. And again, the thing to note here is that the U.S. is a competitor put up against a big producer, can be not necessarily still a low cost producer in all cases, but a producer that has incentive to produce a lot in Brazil. And I think the export market is going to be pretty competitive going into 24, 25. All of that gets us to a building stock situation that's not sort of huge. These aren't huge stocks. We've seen, billion bushel plus carryout for soybeans in the U.S. in the not too recent past. I think we're more building towards that with the caveat that the global stockpiles here are also growing. My colleague Joanna Calusi and I talked a lot about this last week when we did our webinar on South American production situation. You can go back and watch that on YouTube. But the global supply and demand picture really filling up on the basis of a decent crops both in Brazil and the U.S. projected in the next year. That gets us to a season average price projection based on sort of current futures prices and USDA's long run projection of $11.30 per bushel.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You may listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org, willag.org, or search it out in your favorite podcast applications. Just look for Commodity Week. Our thanks go to our panelists today, including Joe Jansen and Scott Irwin, both agricultural economists at the University of Illinois, members of the Farm Doc team, along with Brian Stark of the Andersons and Logan Kimmel of Roach Ag Marketing. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.